Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Do you want to get into some analytics talk? Brian Callahan, you know, what he mentioned about analytics, how the Titans are making more of a push for being a more analytically driven football team. But Tom Pelissero tweets that the Steelers are expected to hire former Falcons head coach Arthur Smith as their offensive coordinator. I think it's a good move.
Mm-hmm.
Go from Matt Canada to Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
That's an upgrade.
Definitely. Well, some people may say no because they look at what
happened. Falcons fans might say no.
Yeah, Falcons fans may say, you may be a little bit cautious there with hiring Arthur Smith as your coordinator. But I think when you become a head coach and, again, you try to be the coordinator too, it's difficult. Yeah. And I think Arthur found it out. It's a difficult challenge. And maybe he's just one of those guys that is better suited to be a coordinator and a damn good coordinator. So.
And your job is made even more difficult when Desmond Ridder is your quarterback.
Exactly, yeah. Man, oh man.
Yeah, so good move, and good move, I think, by the Steelers. Happy to see Arthur land somewhere.
Yeah.
Right up the street.
Hope he does well.
Yeah, well, right down the street.
Finally, they can use Pat Freiermuth at tight end and the passing
game.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was saying this at the break. I'm confused about Arthur Smith and his tight end philosophy. Because look at what he did with Johnny with the Titans. It was great. Mm-hmm. Johnny was a massive part of this offense. He goes to Atlanta. He has Kyle Pitts, the highest drafted tight end in the history of the NFL. I didn't notice Kyle Pitts one single game this season. So I don't know what that is, but we shall see. So Bill Barnwell put out a full breakdown of why the Ravens lost, why the Lions lost, kind of his perspective of the AFC and NFC championship games. And he breaks down why the Lions lost. And I'm trying to pull this up. Breaks down kind of the analytics of it all. First and foremost, one thing that I was wondering, because we talk about how going for it and not going for it, that's an analytically driven decision. And I think about it like, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just the head coach just made a decision. So one thing that Bill Barnwell brings up in this article is, did the analytics say that the Lions should have gone for it on those fourth down tries? Barnwell writes, ESPN's fourth down decision data suggests they were very slightly situations in which the Lions would have been better off going for it. The first decision in the third quarter favored going for it by 0.3%. The second, down 3 points in the fourth quarter, favored going for it by 0.2%. So both situations, the Dan Campbell decided to go for it rather than kick the field goal. Very, 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 a toss-up.
Yeah, it's a flip of the coin almost.
A flip of the coin. Barely even.
So that's where feel, specific game situation, your people, your belief, the crowd, the situation in the game. It's just, I think this is a great discussion because we say analytics. Analytics can go all kinds of different directions. It could be how you evaluate a player who's playing in college, right? But so it's a broad term. But like game situation stuff, it's fascinating. But it comes back to what's in the coach's head and heart at the time, right? So, but that's a great example of it's debatable. Mm-hmm. Whichever one you choose to do, you're going to get debated on it,
right?
We had a vehement disagreement yesterday on all three of these situations, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And what Bill Barnwell writes is what the analytics don't account for is, are you a better offensive team than you are a defensive team? What it does not account for is the fact that the Lions' strength is their offense, is the fact that the Lions' offense, for majority of the first half, it was cooking. So that is where feel comes in. That is where context of the game comes in. And Bill Barnwell supports Dan Campbell's decision to go ahead and go for it because that is, in fact, the Lions' strength. But one thing that isn't pointed out in this article is the context of the score. I don't know if analytics keep that in mind of if you're up by two scores, should you be more conservative? Should you go ahead and take the points? does postseason and a trip to the Super Bowl on the line come into consideration into this? And that's something that Bill Barnwell brings up. Should you be more conservative if it is the postseason? And Bill Barnwell writes, well, I don't see why not. No, I don't see what, or I don't see why you would be more conservative in the postseason than you would in the regular season. And I totally understand that argument. But what isn't brought up here is the score of you're up two scores. Try to maintain it rather than being a little bit more aggressive. But there's one part in here that I do want to get into that Bill Barnwell writes, talking about the crazy, weird Brandon Ayuk touchdown. Mm-hmm. It goes off Vildor's helmet, and Andy Ayuk, you know, catches it off the helmet. That turns into a touchdown. Fluky, weird thing. When we talk about the ball bouncing your way, ball bouncing one way or another, that is the exact example. Bill Barnwell writes, for a second, pretend that Campbell kicked the field goal to go up 17. So that was the first instance. Mm-hmm. In the third quarter, they're leading 24-10, decide to go for it on 4th-and-2. Jameson Williams drops the pass. Says, what changes about this fluky play? Does Vildor have more confidence up 3 scores and catch the pass? Does it fall harmlessly to the ground? Was the pressure of having to come up with the stop after a failed 4th down so stressful that he tried to catch a pass with his face mask? Does Purdy not have... So he goes on and on and on into these crazy hypothetical situations.
We're getting into the metaverse now.
We're getting into the alternate universe where everybody has 3 arms and 1 leg. But...
I'm not going that far with it.
But my point is, it's
a fair thing. It's the game is played by humans, mm-hmm. right? The humans react to the situation. You have to trust your people, and it's not just like here's the situation. Computer says go for it. Like it's not that. It's a series of things.
And
right?
Look, does that change that play? Probably not. Gravity's a weird thing. You know, fluky things happen. But what does change is. Maybe you have 3 more points on the board. So it's just, it's a really interesting article. And Bill Barnwell writes, did the Lions lose the game Sunday night because they didn't get any points from those 2 situations? Of course. Did Campbell's decisions hurt the Lions' chances of winning and put them in an actively worse position? No. But I don't know if I can definitively answer that question. And I think it brings up a really good philosophical conversation about analytics. Mm-hmm. And now that that is going to be, it seems... more of a focus for the Titans moving forward. We're not going to know the answer to this, but I do wonder what would Brian Callahan's approach be if he was in Dan Campbell's shoes?
That's the million-dollar question, I guess. But I think analytics is not just the play on the field or a particular moment. I think it's the totality of what you're trying to accomplish as an organization. Mm-hmm. How do you evaluate players from college, bringing them in? Does they fit your system? If this is the system that you run, we always go back to Rand Carthon and him evaluating the running back and saying, listen, he's the best zone outside zone running back in the draft based upon analytics. And what does San Francisco go do? They draft him, and he has a really good season. Why? Because he fits the system that they're running. So I don't think analytics is just game day
right. It's
situation.
Only one
exactly.
of many
it's
facets.
It's one of many factors.
Yes.
And I think the Titans want to gear more toward the analytics part.
In the big picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not just on game day.
Would you go for it? Yeah.
Yeah, because you're right. There
that
are some.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's some situations. There's going to be the analytics are going to say, don't go for it because it's 4th and a long 3, and you don't need to be going for it. Maybe it's the 3rd quarter. You still got time to kick it or try to kick the field goal, not make it. You still got an opportunity to come back and score. Well, if that is indeed the case. Me as a head coach, I got to look at it from this standpoint too. Yeah, I see the analytic numbers. I understand what they're saying. But how does my team look right now? Do they look like a team that can get a 4th and long 3? If we've been struggling all day, I'm kicking that thing away or I'm kicking a field goal, one of the two.
Right.
But if we've been marching down the field as the Lions were, 4th and 3 – doesn't look bad at all. Why? Because there hasn't been anything they've done to stop our offense. Everything that has stopped our offense is because of us dropping passes or fumbling the ball, stuff like that. So
like Vrabel deciding to kick a field goal against the Saints down 7.
Exactly.
I didn't have a problem with that because you couldn't move the ball.
Absolutely. I can't move the ball. And I know the analytics says, well, go for it. But no, I'm not going for it. Let me kick a field goal. We hope that's the way that Coach Callahan sort of sees the game. Like, yeah, the analytics are there, and it may favor going for it. But, man, it's 4th and 3. We haven't been able to run we haven't been able to get a yard all day.
Right.
And so
eye test.
I'm not going for it. As much as I want to, I'm not going for it. I'm going to kick the field goal. And if we miss it, then I'm going to get on the podium and say, listen, did y'all see our offense today? We wasn't moving the ball, so we decided. I know the analytics said kick it. I mean, the analytics said go for it, but we decided to kick it. Why? Because our offense wasn't moving the ball the way we thought we were going to be able to do. So why go for it? Just kick the field goal.
I do think that is a very important point you're making, D-Mace, that when we're saying analytics or, hey, I think the Titans are moving in the direction of using more analytics, we are not talking just about, and really, it's a very small percentage about game situation analytics. Mike Vrabel was using analytics mm-hmm. to help shape his decision on a certain day, but he wasn't tied to them, but he was using the analytics, like the game in Miami where he decided to go for two. They were down 14. They scored, went for two, scored, and only had to kick the one. That
was
very unconventional.
Trendy thing to do right
now. Trendy
thing
to do, but that was. At least analytics were brought into the discussion. That's kind of a new wave way of thinking with win probability involved, right? But he decided to do it, but he's his own man. He's going to make that decision. This is the kind of thing that's been going on in other sports for a little longer time, right? I'll give you two examples. Baseball, like the whole Moneyball thing, analytics is also used to decide what a player is worth. Right, how much value do you assign to this position, this player? Mm-hmm. That's where analytics maybe is even more important. Not just, hey, you know what? We've decided we're not going to sacrifice bunt because over time you're not going to score as many runs as if you didn't sacrifice bunt. You know, that there's that age-old debate. But still, in baseball, there are times where even though in the long range it's not smart mm-hmm. to bunt, sometimes you need to put a bunt down and put pressure on a defense and move the guy to second base. Here's another one. In college, in basketball, you're up by three. Do you foul the guy and put him on the line to shoot two free throws rather than to let him shoot a three-pointer?
Three. Mm-hmm.
Right? Or if you're down by two and there's 3 seconds left, do I try for the three for the win at the buzzer, or do I take a two-pointer to tie
take it to OT. Mm-hmm.
Right? The analytics would tell you to shoot the three. Go for the win. Because not only do you have to tie it, but you got to win the five-minute overtime. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to think about there.
Do the analytics account for the fact that this might not be a very good shooting day?
That's one part of it.
That's as a coach.
Am I on the
what
road?
Decision you have to make.
Am I the underdog? Mm-hmm. Do I have three guys who have four fouls who are going to maybe foul out in overtime? These are all the other things that the analytics, the win probability does not factor in. So this is a sports-wide issue when it comes to game situation. But when we're talking analytics, it's so much more broad than just the situational play at the end of a game.
And when it comes to the Titans, and when it comes to Brian Callahan, and when the question is, you know, how would Brian Callahan approach that situation? I don't know, because we've never seen Brian Callahan as a head coach. We've never seen him as being the one that makes that decision to go for it or not. I don't think Zach Taylor is known to be a super go-for-it or a super conservative coach. I would say when it probably falls somewhere in the middle of goes for it sometimes if it makes sense, doesn't go for it other times if it doesn't make sense. But Brian Callahan is his own coach. I would say that Dan Campbell, Brandon Staley when he was with the Chargers, they're known as the go-for-it guys. We're going to go for two on most touchdowns. If it's 4th and 4 or less, we're probably going to go for it and try to pick up the first down. They're known as the very go-for-it kind of guys. There's probably some coaches in the league that are known as the, you know, conservative, play it safe, not worried about analytics, Bill Belichick is probably one of those coaches that comes to mind, the very old school football guys. It's not worried about the going forward on the fourth and one, even if it makes sense to do so, yeah. or even if the analytics
I wonder how he evolved
so.
As mm-hmm. the analytics started coming in
and that's
more
what,
in the last 20 years. I'd be curious to look at his track record there. I'm not sure how that happened. But here's, to me,
but
the more important question.
That's why I just don't know about Brian Callahan and his game day, the decisions that he would make on game
because
day.
Because he hasn't been the play caller.
He hasn't been the play caller and hasn't been in that position to mm-hmm. be the one that makes that decision.
In general, most teams are moving in the direction of being more aggressive going for it.
Yes.
Right? I think Vrabel was in that category. As the last few years played out, they went for it more. I think most teams, that's the trend in the entire league. To me, the most important analytic question that I think we're going to see right off the bat is with Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker and everything being new, it's now on them more. Analytics would have told you not to pay Derrick Henry what they have paid him.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you not pay him up to this point? But now, I think more than ever, analytics are probably going to be the reason that I think, and this is just my opinion, I don't know anything here, but to me, the analytics would tell you it's time to get off the ride with Derrick Henry, unless he's willing to take like a league minimum or like a $2 million contract, which I don't think he's going to do. But that's where they sort of went against the grain mm-hmm. of analytics. They trusted their guys. They overpaid for the guys that they thought were the heart and soul. And there was a lot of merit to that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of winning that was done with that. But it's not what the hardcore analytics would tell you to do in terms of valuing the players.
Right. And that's my approach with analytics is I don't think that you can live and die by them. They're a wonderful supplementary tool to maybe give a different perspective, to collect a lot more data than your own brain could probably do. But it doesn't tell the entire story. It doesn't tell the entire story of what the Lions offense was playing like in the first half. It doesn't tell the story of how your team is shooting threes that day. That's where you have the coach's decision or the GM's decision is so incredibly important. I do want to get into your phones on this. We'll get into that coming up next. And everything is on the table. We got Tennessee potential investigation from the NCAA, analytics, the Tennessee Titans and some of their coaching changes that are being made. The Predators fall to the Ottawa Senators in overtime 4-3 last night after going up 3-0 in the first period. We're right into your phones and everything is on the table. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. And we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We are broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. So we mentioned at the top of the show, per Pat 40 of SI.com, Tennessee is under potential NCAA investigation for NIL violations in multiple sports. And per this Pat 40 article, he said details are scarce on what Tennessee is potentially facing in the latest case, including the number of involved sports. Not a ton of information of exactly what was going on behind closed doors, but a little bit of clarification from CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd. He confirmed that the investigation is investigating Nico Yamaleava and his big-time alleged $8 million NIL deal. So not sure exactly what that has to do with Nico Yamaleava and what the details are there. I'm sure we'll get some more information as time goes on, but it is in regards to Nico Yamaleava.
We've got a bunch. And that goes back a ways. Like, that's the beginning of NIL, if I mm-hmm. remember correctly, right? That he was still in high school, and that was one of the first big stories I heard. That was something that was noted, how quickly Tennessee formed the collective. They were on the, I like to use the term, cutting edge. They were on the cutting edge of NIL. They were.
Yeah.
They were. And they jumped. They
now
jumped
it seems
out there,
like,
and
they're in trouble for it.
Inspire Sports, their collective is known to be one of the more cutting edge and robust and collectives in college football. So I don't know what is part of me feels the NCAA has nothing here that they're just trying to unfold all of these things that they want to stay relevant, that the NCAA is always meddling and putting their big old noses in places where it doesn't belong. And the other half of me thinks, well, this is the second time that this has come up. They are under probation, that this has been a problem with Tennessee, that a postseason ban is really the biggest thing that the NCAA can do. I don't know if this warrants that, but this might not be just another one of those. Oh, the NCAA is investigating us again. Yeah.
Well, they're looking at Florida. They're looking at Florida State.
They're looking at other teams. But then, to me, the NCAA is like that one person in the office or in the building. You're like, what do they do? You're trying to figure out, okay, you got this high title, but what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, I never really see you here. And then all of a sudden, they got to show you, oh, this is what I do, okay? So they got to make up something. Like, okay, we're going to do this or we're going to do that. The NCAA is just like for so long, it's like, what do you do, NCAA? Because you're not out front on, you're not proactive in anything. You're reactive to everything. So now are you, because of these conferences sort of moving away from sort of the NCAA, they're making these power conferences. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you want to step up as if you're doing something now. Whereas before, you were always reactive to things that happened. I hope there's not a there with Tennessee. I really do. But like you said, there may be something there. But is it to the sort of magnitude that, you know, the NCAA drops all of this and make this is a huge story? Is this a huge story? Is it really just sort of piggybacking on what they've already had, and now they may have found a few more things that don't warrant really much?
I don't think it does warrant much. Everyone is paying players. You're allowed to do it now. But I want to get into your thoughts on this. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Glenn from Greenbrier texts in, says the NIL investigation into Tennessee and Nico isn't hard to understand. The intent of NIL was the athlete could not receive NIL until that student was on campus. We all know this didn't happen. That is correct. That was the intent. However, it California state law, so you can start making NIL money. Missouri is the same. I think there's a few other states across the U.S. that it is state law that high school students can make NIL money high school.
So if that was – if they're basing it upon that premise of what the texter just said, anywhere that Nico would have went, they would have been investigated. Because he was getting money prior to him going to college. And what they're saying is you can't receive NIL benefits until you sign a letter of intent or until you actually get on campus.
It differs in every state. Mm-hmm. For example, in Missouri, if you are a Missouri high school student athlete, mm-hmm. and you sign your letter of intent to a Missouri in-state public school, mm-hmm. you can start making money in high school. That's not the case in California. You don't have to commit to a California public school.
But is Tennessee one of those states where you can't receive NIL until you sign?
But he wasn't a Tennessee high school student. He's a California high school
student. I know,
but
what I'm saying is there could be a loophole in there where the NCAA says, nah, you know, yeah, you can do it in California. There's a lot of things you can do in California, okay? But when you go to another state, you can't do those said things. Like, yes, you can sign or you can get NIL money, but as a state here in Tennessee, our laws are different when it comes to that. You cannot receive benefits until you sign. So does that mean only those that go to school in Tennessee? And it doesn't mean those that are outside the state.
Teammates, I have no idea.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
And
yeah.
That is the problem, is every single state in America has different
operating NIL laws. Yeah, exactly.
That it is now state to state, that there's not an umbrella NIL law, federal law.
And that
is where we get into all of mm-hmm. these gray areas of every state is different. Mm-hmm. I got a doozy for you, Willie.
Ooh, here we go, Willie.
One texter says, do you think that Coach Bruno is getting on the hot seat? Saros is having his worst year. The defense doesn't look good. Young talent's going backwards and scorers aren't finishing.
The hot seat is, I think, a pretty ridiculous thing to throw out there in the first year. To try to answer the question, I think the Bruno system, if you take a look, and I'll use the term analytics, I think in the what are they getting night after night in terms of quality? What are they giving up defensively in terms of quality? Mm-hmm. I think they have overachieved to a large extent. And even results-wise, I think they're probably a little bit ahead after 50 games of where people thought they would be after 50. And we're talking about this the day after a really painful loss to a team that's not very good, a team that's talented, but a team that you had a 3-0 lead on that you should have closed the deal, right? Everybody feels bad mm-hmm. about that. So we're asking that on this day. So it doesn't feel good now. I'm looking at a 50-game thing. I do think it's fair to say that Saros is not having a Saros type of year. I think he's been much better. The last 7 games, I thought he was good last night. I thought he did well to keep that game 3-3 after it looked like it was going to get completely out of control. I think Saros is playing well, and I think he will play even better down the stretch. Season isn't over yet. So Saros having his worst year, that's fair after 50 games. Mm-hmm. But to me, that is a plus side of Bruno, right? I think there's nothing that's more at the mercy of the head coach than the way the goalie plays. There are things that you can do, but especially the way the Predators want to play, try to get the other team on their heels, play going forward. I think if they can put it all together and have Saros play the way he's capable for the rest of the season, I think you're going to see better results. The tough facet of it to me is the young players, right? I think Andrew Brunette probably sits there each night going, man, why can't I get these guys to get to the next level, mm-hmm. right? He said it somewhere the day they say sent Yusuf Parsonen down. Mm-hmm. He said, I kind of feel responsible. I feel like I've let him down, that we have to do this, right? And I think that's a good coach kind of looking inward and saying, where can I help these guys? Because he's a former player. He's been through the growth process, right? He wants to get the most out of his players. Cody Glass went through a long period of time where he just couldn't seem to figure it out. The injuries and everything like that. There's some signs of life there. His last 2 games, I think, have been his best 2 games, for sure. So overall, I still evaluate Andrew Brunette as doing a very good job with this. But you know, snapshot today, everybody feels bad about that when you have a 3-0. It's the first time they've lost a game like that this year, mm-hmm. up by 3 and losing. And it wasn't the worst-case scenario because they could have lost in regulation. But still.
Still pretty bad.
Bad loss. And so now they're carrying with that into tomorrow night where they're on national TV against a team that is really faltering, but a very talented team that people thought was a Stanley Cup contender. Mm-hmm. So a very intriguing backdrop to the last game before the All-Star break. But hot seat, no.
TNT tomorrow. Kurt asks, are the Preds sellers now?
I think they're not buyers. Mm-hmm. I think they're looking for the long term. What helps us the most in the big picture is how I would define it. In what I've listened to Barry Trotz say in all of the public realms, and there's been plenty of them, and the best one to me is on our station every week. You get a great insight into what he's thinking. I don't think he's made a secret of it. I think there are players that if you could help him long term, then yeah, he would trade to try to open it up. You've got to make room somewhere along the line for some of these guys in Milwaukee eventually, whether it's at the trade deadline this year. And I don't think they were ever going to be big buyers unless it was a guy that didn't cost you a whole lot, right? They're not going to trade their first-round pick. They're not going to trade their top prospect for somebody to try to get them in over the hump into the playoffs this year unless it didn't cost them very much. So I think you're looking for ways to improve. It's an easy thing to say, but I think they're probably more sellers, but they're not going to sell off anybody that's in the big-picture plan. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Tyson Barrie, you know, guys like that, guys who are in the last year of their contract, I think they would be definitely listening towards if they got a good deal for them. But I think they would. It's a limited seller, I would say.
Text her into my personal text line. Mm. Jared Stillman, Texan.
Oh, my goodness.
Says, time to trade Saros.
For what?
I'll ask and get back to you.
Right. Well, what's the offer? That's the question.
I'm sure his offer is not going to be high considering the way he's been playing.
Exactly. So if it's for 2 first-round picks, 3 first-round picks, then I say no. It's not time to trade Saros.
If it is for a top line center.
Well, then I got to listen to that. If it's a top line center, but who is that? Who's trading me a top line center?
That's Willie, the question. This is not my question.
Okay, I would not trade Soros at the deadline. I probably would not unless I was, as Barry Trotz said, blown away, mm-hmm. blown away. And a first line center is the thing that you would listen to. I would say, depending on who it is. Now, just like we had a great debate on, is Brock Purdy elite? Mm-hmm. Is he on his way to being elite? Who is elite? A true number one center. Was Ryan Johansson a number one center? Maybe at his best for a limited period of time. Maybe. But that's what they were hoping to get when they traded Seth Jones to get him. But the word I always use is, if you're going to trade UC Saros, you better get certainty back. Not a bunch of first-round picks. That's not certainty at all. There's no guarantee that any of the first-round picks, especially if you're trading him to a contender, and the pick is going to be 21st 1 year, 18th another year, and then 17th the next year. There's no guarantee you get certainty out of that, and it's going to be 4 years or 5 years before you get the return of that at all. So I need certainty now, and that's what I don't know that anybody is really going to offer, is somebody like that. If they're going to, they want Saros, they want to give you the future stuff. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Barry Trotz, I'm saying, heck no, not for UC Saros. UC Saros is in the prime of his career, and I think over time you're going to see that he is a separator. He's an elite goalie that is not your regular goalie. But you're not calling around to shop him around.
You're not actively shopping him. Just because he's having a
that's D-Mace's favorite player now. Yeah,
just because he's having Saros. A bad stretch here, and it's been bad. But again, you don't okay a really good player to elite player. You don't trade them away because they're having a bad season or a bad stretch within a season. Mm-hmm. It happens. You try to let them work out of it. That's the point of having 80-some games. You figure, okay, there's going to be a lull in there. Now, he's had his lulls, and they hadn't been good, and you just hope that he fights out of it. But you just don't say, oh, we're getting rid of him. We're trading him away. But listen, if you get a top-line guy, a top-line score, then maybe yes. But other than that, to me, because then what do? You trade him away, you elevate Lincoln, and then you play in the scarf up. Then what? Now you possibly bringing this young guy up a little bit too soon.
That would be the plan.
Yeah, you're bringing him up a little bit too soon. Lincoln is on a one-year deal. What, he has 1 year? This is the last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's a free agent.
So he's a free agent next year. So what if Lincoln doesn't sign back with the team? Now you're looking for another goalie. You're going to be back in the same situation, relying on a young guy to be your number one guy. And then you're going to be looking back if Askarov doesn't start off the way you want him to, you'd be looking back like, why in the hell did you trade away Saros? Trade away Saros?
I think this discussion will continue to be a discussion up until the trade deadline. I do mm-hmm. think that the phone will ring and people will float different things at Barry Trotz. Even if he never says anything to anybody, and he has said, if you blow me away, I'll listen. That's really what he has said on the record to a number of different people.
I think that's what every general manager's approach should be.
But you're willing. It's like when you go to the car dealership and you don't have a car. That's the position I was in. Mm-hmm. I needed a car. I got to go buy a car. I'm at a disadvantage because I can't.
You don't have any leverage.
Yeah.
I gotta find a car. I gotta function. But if I already have a car and I don't have to sell my car, mm-hmm. I could keep my car, and it's a pretty good car. Now I'm in a good position to get a good deal, mm-hmm. right? I think that's where they are with Saros. They fully intend to sign him to the next contract. And it's interesting how goaltending is evolving in the analytics mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You can win with a good goalie and not an elite goalie if you have a great team around that goalie. That's what's been proven here. But Nashville's a long way from having that kind of roster right now. So when you have a goalie that elevates your team, and he hasn't, in fairness, to this point in the season, he's been very average for him. The bar is very high, and I still think in 30 games the numbers can certainly come around. I think they will come around. But they intend to sign him to the next contract. That's a position of strength. That means I don't have to – like, teams will take advantage of you when they know you are going to get rid of the player eventually. you'll say, hey, that's not a good enough deal for UC Soros. And they'll say, oh, well, then we'll just wait for him to become a free agent, and you'll get nothing for him.
Yeah, you're not a very good negotiator if you're not using that.
He's under contract all the way through next year. You have a lot of time to wait this out and make the right decision.
Another texter texts in about analytics, says, I would really recommend you all look into what modern sports departments use. You guys are acting like there's a chart printed off at the beginning of the game, and that's what teams use for their analytics for the game. Any analytics department worth their salt have extremely sophisticated models that absolutely take into account current game situations. They go so far in depth, they take into account personnel on the field in real time, blah, 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 blah. So far in the game, so for certain positions, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. But the thing is, you can take every single possible factor, wind chill, direction of the wind, personnel on the field, so on and so forth. But still, nobody can predict what's going to happen. Every single analytical model could have told the Detroit Lions to go for it on 4th-and-2, up 24-10. No analytical model is going to tell you that Jameson Williams is going to drop that pass.
No, they're not. I mean, listen, I mean...
But who dropped the first one? Josh Reynolds dropped the first one.
Yeah,
right?
I'm sorry.
First one.
Yes.
And then it was
a bad pass. Josh Reynolds.
Jameson
Williams on the second one.
Jameson Williams also caught the touchdown pass at the end, which I was hoping was Josh Reynolds, because that would have gotten my take.
Reynolds
to the bank.
Dropped two.
And Ferkser got tackled on the 1 yard line.
I'm not bitter. I don't know what the hell Ferkser was doing. Well, I'm going to tell you what he was doing before we go to break. He anticipated a guy being right there, so he was running directly out of bounds. And when he found out nobody was. There he tried to turn the ball up. Dude, you 280, okay, 290. You can't turn the ball up like you 180.
290?
I'm just throwing.
That's all. My goodness.
Numbers is a funny thing.
Exactly.
Lord, Anthony Ferkser hold 290 pounds. Aaron Brewer.
I didn't know the guy was still in the league. All of a sudden, here's Anthony Ferkser almost scored a touchdown in the championship game.
Oh, that's got to be his brother, right? There's like no way that's Anthony Ferkser.
Apparently, that was his first target of the season. First target.
And he runs out of bounds. Damn you.
Damn. All right, we'll continue this conversation coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and The Game Nashville app. I do have a quick Tennessee basketball thought. It has been a long time, at least for me, that college basketball, that one person, one single player has been must-see TV for me. Zion is probably the last one. Dalton Connect is becoming that for me. That I've planned my evening around making sure that I am in front of my TV, sitting on the couch, watching the Tennessee-South Carolina game tonight, because I don't want to miss what Dalton Connect is doing. I think that the game of college basketball, specifically men's college basketball, because I think women's college basketball has done a fantastic job of marketing its superstars, whether it's Paige Beckers or Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese. Like, there are names in women's college basketball. Zion's really the last one that I can think of. Maybe Brandon Miller last year with Alabama, and I think a majority of that was probably the villain aspect.
Some of it was from the wrong reason. Yeah.
The legal aspect of Brandon Miller. Dalton Connect is must-see TV for me, and that is making college basketball so fun for me this season.
I agree. He is must-see TV. What's the difference, though? Those guys are there for 1 year. And then they go pro.
Yeah.
And so that's what's
and that's the difference of the women's game.
Whittled away. Yeah, the women's players have been staying longer, and you get to enjoy them for
longer
the whole growth
of,
their college career. So Connect, I realize he's not a freshman, but he's burst on the scene, and now when we discover him, you only get to watch him through the end of March, and then that's it. So it's been whittling away at college basketball, and now the musical chairs of the NIL has taken away even more of the continuity. It's just it's a broken game to me at the highest level. It's sad, but Connect at the same time, I'm going to enjoy every time I get a chance to watch him.
He's much watched television.
He's awesome.
I tell you that.
He is so exciting.
Is this Tennessee team different because of him? I think that's a
of course
question.
They are.
I think
because
so.
What's the question of Tennessee the last 5 years under Rick Barnes?
They
can't
Rick
do
Barnes,
it in March.
Right?
They Rick Barnes in March.
This guy might change that narrative.
It does feel different. Absolutely.
Get him the ball like Jimmy Chipwood. I like my chances.
And it's not
they
even
haven't
just
had a
the
guy
go-to
like that.
Guy. It's the supporting cast around
him
as
he'll
well.
And he'll get the ball to those guys.
And they play great defense.
They're always going to play good defense. Yeah. Always going to play good defense. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company. It's up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.